Hey sinners, I'm Megan.
And I'm Lindsay, and this is Sinners Among Saints.
Hello, hello.
Hello, welcome back. It's our favorite Friday.
Oh. I was like, what is that?
Sorry, some video came on my phone right when we started.
I was like looking all around myself, like, what is that noise?
Well, there you go.
Welcome back.
Welcome to Friday. Oh, my hell. Okay. Oh, how's your week been?
It's been better because my back is a little better. Good. So like I can function, but it still hurts. I wish it would just go away, but
yeah,
I can at least like move around and be somewhat of a human.
That's good.
Yeah. I don't have to sit on my butt pillow.
I was just going to say, I didn't see you bring out your butt pillow today. So,
but it
was good.
Yeah. It was a busy week and yeah, just normal life.
Yeah. Us too.
So
no big changes.
Nope.
I don't think we have like a lot of stuff, except for we do have some new Patreons this week that we want to shout out.
Yes.
So we have three this week. The first one is Mariah Redding, which she's my bonus daughter. We love her.
Yes,
thank you so much. She always has like been into this kind of stuff, and so she like texts me after all the episodes. Yeah. And
I think it's so sweet that she's like supportive and
yeah.
And so, yeah.
She's amazing.
She is.
And then Carrie Davis. And Carrie, I'm actually covering a case that she gave us next week.
Yeah.
Which is about her husband who was murdered.
Yeah.
And so we're really grateful that she's able to share her story with us.
And absolutely. So, and she's been super sweet and supportive, yeah, like from the beginning.
Amazing.
So, yeah.
So thank you so much for your continued support. And then Bailey Kinniston. I have known her for a little while now, and she's amazing as well. So,
thank you guys. I didn't know that you knew her.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well.
I know her and her mom.
Well, look at that. Okay.
Thank you guys so much for your support. If you guys want, if you're not a Patreon already, we are actually recording our second Patreon episode tonight after we finish this one up.
Yeah.
And it'll release later this week sometime.
Yeah. Probably Tuesday or Wednesday. Yeah.
And so we have two episodes on there now. So if you join, you can get two bonus episodes, which are going to be pretty amazing.
Yep.
So you don't want to miss out.
Yeah. So if you want to, have the extra time with us, which we have had requests for, but we're just not quite to that point. I don't think yet. We would love to we would love to release twice a week. But we also have to have jobs right now, so.
Yeah.
And so,
we just don't have the time right now, but.
But we are hoping to get there. We also had somebody ask us if we were going to do meet and greets.
I was like, what?
Yeah, people want to meet someone us? Someone wants to see us?
Okay.
I was blown away. I was like, we would love to. I just don't know if we have enough people that will come. I don't want to do it and have like one person show up.
Yeah, that like don't already know us.
Yeah, yeah. But it kind of blew me away. I was like, oh my gosh, someone wants to meet us?
I know. It was crazy.
So we might have to like.
We would love to meet all of you too. So if anyone
we
else
might
is
have
interested
to,
in that, I guess, let us know.
Yeah, let us kind of know. Or we can maybe come up with something.
Yeah.
Like a live or something. Like that's kind of like a meet and greet or I don't know, something.
Yeah.
It would be fun.
It would be really fun.
Yeah. All right. Should we get into our soul cleanse?
Oh, yeah.
Here we go.
Soul cleanse.
I actually had like some pretty good feedback about this.
Yeah.
After people listened to it for the first time today with our last episode that released.
I'm so glad.
Yeah. So you're welcome, world.
Yeah, you are welcome. All right. So this week we are going to mention an organization. It's called People Helping People. And it says, so it's at PHP, we believe that when moms do better, kids do better. When kids do better, communities do better. And when communities do better, we all do better. So their main goal is helping single mothers or low-income women transition from welfare to employment. And it says for every woman that they can help do that, saves the community $5,000 to $20,000 annually. They have different phases for their program to help women become employed and self-sufficient. And so they talk about how like there's already a lot of help out there to help women, you know, write resumes and get job interviews, but they go beyond that and they help. I think they have like employers that are kind of in there, like that know about them, like that they can kind of send women to and help them get these like long lasting jobs.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And so on here, their mission says PHP is dedicated to reducing the number of children living in poverty by teaching low-income women, primarily single moms, how to earn an adequate income. Successful employment makes a huge difference in the lives of women and children we serve in our program. Women who become successfully employed contribute in many ways. They become tax-paying citizens, support the economy by purchasing goods and services, become homeowners, and send their children to college. It also says, we help clients see themselves as primary earners rather than supplemental earners. Working with business professionals provides an opportunity for clients to meet and learn from a variety of people. This interaction helps them expand their options and discover opportunities that might otherwise not be available to them. We provide long-term employment support. Employment agencies often stop working with clients once they get a job. However, our clients understand that getting a job is just the first step toward earning an adequate income. We are here to support them long-term. And they have, so their website is phputah.org. And if you go on there, you can donate to help. And then there's also like, they have some success stories. There we go. I was like trying to pull it up and I just kept putting a heart over it. But here's one, like it kind of talks about before she was in PHP or part of the program. She was a single mom of two daughters. She had immigrated to the U.S. to get her master's degree. She was stagnant in a job with no opportunities or growth and wasn't using her full skill set. And now she has a job as a software engineer, makes six figures with 401k and benefits. She's completed several other certifications, purchased cars for herself and her children. She loves to travel, takes herself and her kids on vacation, fought for citizenship for herself and her family. So that's just like one of them. There's another lady that was just a single mom working part-time at a fabric store. Now she's had stable employment for 18 plus years, full benefits and retirement, increased her income by over 700%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Responsible for formulating a yearly $40 billion national budget for National Institutes of Health. She owns her own home. She earned a master's of public administration. So it really looks like they do above and beyond, like what basic kind of help, you know.
And is there information on there, like how if people are in a bad situation and want to join the program, how to do that?
Yeah, so let's see.
As well as how to donate. Because we looked this up and it's a grassroots nonprofit.
Uh-huh.
And we were like, I don't really know what that means.
Yeah, so it says to become a client. It's a self-paced employment program. Women can enroll at any time. Clients start by attending a new client program overview so that they can learn about program requirements and expectations and meet staff. There's no obligation to participate. And it says our next program overview dates can be found here, and there's a link. And then to receive a call from the staff, you need to fill out an intake form, which there's a link on their website as well, and it's underneath Become a Client. But it also says you can call them at 801-583-5300. And you can email them at info@phputah.org for more information.
Sweet.
Yeah. Okay. So it sounds really awesome coming from someone who was raised by a single mom and who has been a single mom. That kind of stuff is awesome because welfare is great and there's those kind of benefits, but they don't.
They don't help you get out of the situation.
Yeah. And
it's just like putting a Band-Aid over stuff.
Yeah. And sometimes. There's a lot of times my mom was struggling, but she worked and then she would make too much money to get help.
Yeah.
You know, and the same with like my boyfriend's ex-wife. She's got, you know, 3 kids and she works full time and with what she makes, which isn't a lot nowadays.
Yeah. It's not.
She, you know, can't get help with like food stamps or anything like that. And so I think sometimes being a single working mom, you almost get penalized.
Yeah, it's true.
So I think this program sounds like amazing to help you learn how to get that better job so you can fully support yourself and feel comfortable, because it's so stressful being a single mom and you shouldn't have to like stress about your money and how you're going to pay your bills.
Yeah.
And still be able to enjoy life and like go on a vacation.
Exactly. Like you shouldn't just always have to live life just to work.
Yeah.
Like you should be able to enjoy life, and this gets you out of that kind of situation. So yeah. You're not just surviving, you're thriving.
Right. And even when I was single, my ex-husband's great and he pays child support and like he will help in any way he needs to, but I'm also not someone that's gonna like expect that he pays for my life too. And so even with having that supportive like co-parent for the parenting side, it was still stressful, like trying to pay my bills and get stuff done. And there's a lot of single moms who don't have that other person, and so they're even more like stressed because they are the sole parent for their children and the only person bringing money in. And so this program to me sounds pretty amazing.
Yeah, shout out to single moms and shout out to this amazing program.
Yeah,
so
yeah,
go donate if you can. Go, for sure. You know, all the things. And if you need help, and we looked it up because it's a grassroots organization. And it says that a grassroots nonprofit is an organization that is funded by individual donors. So they don't have like big businesses that are giving them money. So that's really like how they become successful and are able to help people is by our donations.
Yeah.
So if you're looking for a good cause to donate to, this sounds like a great one.
Yeah. And I love that, you know, they're trying to help these single moms, but it's kind of, the foundation is to get children out of poverty.
Yeah.
So.
And then it also, if you are raised in poverty, you're more likely to stay in poverty. Uh-huh. So it's helps break the cycle.
Yeah, for
which
sure.
Which is really hard to do.
And so. Show kids, you know, and show children like that you can do stuff on your own if you need to. And, you know, and yeah, I think it just sounds like a great.
Yeah.
A great organization. So.
Sounds amazing.
Amazing. Mazeballs. All right, are we ready to bring you down?
Yes.
Ready so for ready. A downer. This week I'm doing another case with a younger person. I don't know what my fascination is with young people.
In Utah, you know, it actually is like one of those things where the more you research, the more you realize there's like a lot of child stuff.
Yeah.
And like younger, like young adult or early late teen stuff.
It's interesting. So today, this one is going to be on Asa Ray Vidinhar. And I don't know if you've ever heard of him.
I have.
So Asa was born on April 25th, 1998. He is one of 6 children, 4 of whom were adopted. His father was an engineer for the Air Force, and I think his mom's a stay-at-home mom. But the thing with this case is that there is literally no information about the parents. They don't even put their names.
Oh,
like,
wow.
In any of the court documents and any of the newspaper articles, in the obituaries, it just says parents. It doesn't have their names.
I wonder if...
So
that's weird.
Yeah, I think they didn't want people to know who they were.
Maybe to protect the other kids?
Maybe. But you know his name.
But
so, like...
That's bizarre.
But yeah, so I think she was a stay-at-home mom. I couldn't find anything about her, but I do know that he... And there is, conflicting information as to whether or not he is a civilian that works for the Air Force or if he is an active military serviceman. I don't know. but he's an engineer for the Air Force. So,
okay.
It said that Aza was a quiet kid who had a speech impediment, was socially awkward, and usually kept to himself. But he was extremely smart, and he excelled in school. But the interesting thing was that Davis School District spokesman Chris Williams said that the parents would move the children in and out of the public school system. So there would be times where they were enrolled in public school, and then other times they would be homeschooled.
Okay.
And so it just kind of went back and forth. At the time of the murders that we'll talk about, Aza was enrolled in ninth grade at West Point Junior High. But because of the in and out of school, the authorities weren't really sure how well, like, any of the other children in school really knew him.
Okay.
Because it doesn't seem like he was really one place or the other.
Yeah.
For a long time. But we do know he was an honor student. He was a member of the National Honor Society, and he was a distance runner on the track team.
Okay.
And it sounds like their family was really into running.
Okay.
So one neighbor did describe him as being different. And the only reason I put this in here, because it's the most ridiculous reason for thinking a child is different. So I was like, I just had to put it in there because yes. I was like, if this is what means your kid is different, then my kids are like psychopaths.
Way out there.
So yeah. She said that he was once caught throwing dozens of rocks over a fence.
That's like a daily occurrence for right? all three I was of like, my children.
Was there any other context? Like, was he throwing them at babies? Like,
yeah, like, what?
What do you mean? I'm like, he's a boy.
Yeah.
Like, boys.
Literally, my kids throw rocks. They get in trouble every single day for throwing rocks.
Yeah.
And we've had windows broken throwing rocks. And one of my kids is obsessed with sticks.
Oh, like, Nolan is obsessed with sticks.
Piles sticks on our patio or our porch. Like, anywhere he goes, we always, it's like a running joke in our family yeah. because no matter where we go to Lagoon and he finds a stick.
That's Nolan. And he has them like in his bedroom. Yeah. I don't know how many times I've like stepped on a like, stick in I my house these, where I'm like, oh my gosh.
Can I take this inside? No.
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
He's like a dog.
Yeah. Nolan is a dog and a cat because he has his boxes that he lives in and he likes his stick. So yeah, I was just like, that is the yeah, weirdest is, reason to describe a child as being weird.
Makes me feel terrible.
Yeah. I was okay. like, oh, what do your kids do?
Yeah.
It's probably a neighbor that doesn't rocks? Even have kids.
Probably.
And yeah.
A judgy neighbor.
Right.
Don't judge my neighbor, my kids for throwing rocks.
Speaking okay? of like judgy people, I just was thinking of a Karen and we got in the car the other day and Nolan's like, Mom, do you know what a Karen is? And I was like, yeah. He's like, Karens can be anywhere. And I was like, it's true.
So, you never know so where Karens true. Are lurking.
Yeah. It's just so funny. I was like, yes, I do know what a Karen is.
I love it.
I lived before there was such thing as Karens. Yeah. I mean, there was Karens, there but was we hadn't Karens. Labeled them. We yeah. hadn't labeled them as Karens yet. Back to the story. In 2011, Aza was 13 and he was reported missing, which sparked a pretty big search. By their church and by authorities, but he was later found in the lobby of a Wendy's 4 miles from his house. I would okay. punch my kid.
Yeah, I would too.
I'd be like, what the
like
hell?
Like, he just walked to Wendy's yeah, and didn't tell anyone?
I mean, they didn't say, like, what happened around it. That's just where they found him.
Okay.
And then, when asked if the police had had any other dealings with Aza before or after that incident, Sheriff Todd Richardson would say that the family did an intervention through their ecclesiastic leadership.
What?
Yeah, which to me, so hold on. But he said as far as anything else through law enforcement or the state, it was his understanding that there wasn't any other dealings with him.
An intervention?
Yeah. So this makes me think that they felt like there was something else going on with him.
Yeah.
And was it like one of those weird... And I'm sorry if people don't think this is weird, but I do. The, like, send your gay kid to the camp to un-gay them. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, what do you mean you did an intervention
yeah,
through what? Your church? What does that mean?
Yeah, what does that mean?
I don't know.
And anytime something's done through the church like that, I'm like, it's either, like, an exorcism or something like that where they're trying to, like...
It doesn't sit right
he's
with
got
me.
The devil in him
and not that I'm not
gay.
Against churches at all, but like
no.
when you like but when you do an intervention through like, a church, like
no. What I don't even know. We need more context.
Yeah.
For this.
Did they
That's
sit?
Weird.
Did they sit down and like a drug intervention? And everybody was like, "We don't want you to walk to Wendy's." Like, like, I don't understand. Like, it's just the weirdest. It's just super weird to me.
Yeah. I guess it depends on what it is, but
yeah,
I feel like that's weird.
It at least sounds weird, if nothing else.
Yeah.
So on May 22nd, 2013, Asa was tasked with watching his two younger brothers while his mom took his three sisters to a dance recital because their father was working out of town.
Okay. And he's 13?
At this point, he's 15.
Oh, he's 15. Okay.
So when they return home, Mrs. Videnhar, because remember, I don't have any names, finds the body of 4-year-old Benji in the home, and he appears to be deceased.
Oh, no.
Mrs. Videnhar doesn't see her other two boys, 10-year-old Alex or 15-year-old Asa, so she immediately calls 911 asking for an ambulance and to report her two other children missing. Once officers arrive, they find 10-year-old Alex's body in the lower part of the home, where he is also deceased, but there's still no sign of Asa, who at this point is thought to be in danger.
Oh my gosh.
So police immediately begin a search, canvassing the surrounding areas. And after several hours of searching, police finally find 15-year-old Asa miles away from home, walking in the street covered in blood.
I thought you were going to say he was at a Wendy's.
At a Wendy's.
I was going to lose it.
That's his thing.
I'm never going to Wendy's again.
Right? He did not have any weapons on him, and he seemed to be unharmed. So they took him to the local hospital for an evaluation where he spoke very openly with detectives. After his evaluation and what was told to investigators, Asa was then booked into the Farmington Youth Detention Center.
Oh.
So we'll skip forward here a couple months. On July 1st, 2013, the Davis County Attorney's Office filed formal charges of 2 counts of felony murder, along with a motion to certify Asa as an adult. And here's what happened that night from what can be pieced together.
Okay.
Asa's two younger brothers had the TV up too loud, and it bothered Asa. So he decided the only thing to do was to not only quiet his brothers for good, but to brutally stab them 116 times.
What?
Yes.
Because they were listening to the TV too loud.
Uh-huh. Leaving the knife sticking out of one of their necks.
Oh my gosh.
10-year-old Alex Videnhar was stabbed 88 times, and 4-year-old Benji was stabbed 28 times.
4 years old.
Yeah. And they're the most adorable little kids. The most adorable little kids. On Tuesday, July 16th, 2013, Asa sat in court with his father by his side. He seemed calm when answering yes after being asked if he understood his charges. One of Asa's attorneys, Todd Sessions, asked that the judge wait to deal with the request to certify Videnhar as an adult until after they had a preliminary hearing. So at that point, Judge Janice Frost set a preliminary hearing at which evidence would be presented on August 27th, 2013. And at that point, if the judge determines that there's enough evidence to move forward, that's when they'll do their certification hearing, which would be much more involved to determine if Asa should be charged within the juvenile system or the adult system. Todd Utzinger, our favorite.
Oh, Todd.
Our favorite defense attorney.
Hot toddy.
Hottie toddy with a naughty body.
I don't even know what he looks like, so now I feel
I
like
do,
I
and it's not. It is not that.
I feel like I need to look him up.
It is definitely
but
not
I
that.
Think we should just nickname him Hot Toddy because, you know, why not?
He says, it is our belief that juveniles should stay in juvenile court. He is barely 15 years old, and the mental development of a 15-year-old can be seriously harmed, as well as their psyche, if they are in the adult system. Asa's parents also expressed that they would prefer that he stay in the juvenile system. Utzinger said that the judge takes several things into consideration, like the parents' wishes, the kid's background, mental health issues, if a gun or weapon was used, and the seriousness of the crime. The defense believes that the juvenile court system can adequately address any problems or issues Videnhar may have better than the adult system can. And although the prosecution would not comment after the hearing, they did say that from what they had seen in terms of evidence, they believed that the public's safety was paramount. So I agree, like, I'm sure the juvenile system does offer more help, more mental health stuff,
yeah,
than the adult system and just like going straight to prison. And I understand that like he is barely 15. You know, their mental development is not finished, you know, and, yeah, and I understand that to a point, but it was a pretty gnarly crime.
Yeah, this is hard. Have you ever watched Killer Kids?
Oh, yeah, I love that show.
Okay, so some of these guys commit, like, the most brutal crimes, and then they go to the juvenile place, and it's like, eh, like, it's not that scary, it's not that, like, yeah. I feel like, yes, there's resources for them, mm-hmm, but also I want to scare them straight a little bit.
Yeah.
And they always get out much earlier.
Well, so, and we'll talk about that here, too, and as this goes on, I think you'll kind of change your mind. But, okay. So on August 27th, Vidhunhar waives his right to a preliminary hearing. So now the court would just move to schedule a hearing on whether or not he should be certified as an adult or stay in the juvenile system. And I think part of this was hard to do just because he was underage. So there was a lot, there was like stuff is kind of missing. But we jump forward here about a year. So in June 2014, Aza was back in court in Farmington where he pleaded guilty to two counts of murder, admitting he intentionally and knowingly stabbed his brothers to death. He agreed to a plea deal that states he will serve time for one count of murder in juvenile detention until he turns 21, at which time he will be transferred into the adult system and begin to serve time for the second count of murder, a sentence that could be from just months to life. And this is called a blended sentence, and it's not used very often.
That's like a good compromise. I kind of
feel that way too. So yeah, the defense, prosecution, and Aza's parents all agreed that this was a fair deal, giving him time to get his high school diploma as well as some treatment before being sent to the Utah State Prison. Because in Utah, no matter what you do as a crime, if you are convicted and sentenced in the juvenile system alone, you will be released at 21. Mm. So,
okay.
Judge Frost said, it's clear that Aza needs guidance and direction, things he would not receive in adult prison. She says, you can't make up for what happened, but you can commit to doing better and being better. It's a sad thing that happened, but you can move forward from this. I hope you take advantage of your opportunity. The judge also lets Vidhunhar know that his behavior in the juvenile detention center will directly determine what his sentence will look like in prison once he reaches 21.
Okay. So shape up.
Yeah. So
be a model prisoner and maybe.
So he thinks about it. And a mere 5 months later, on November 1st, 2014, he would assault another inmate in the juvenile detention center with a broom. He's now 16 and he would be charged as an adult with a third degree felony assault by prisoner because even though he was serving this sentence in the juvenile system, he had been certified as an adult.
Oh,
with that blended sentence. That's why he was going to be transferred to the adult system. And in Utah, once you're once you are convicted of one crime as an adult, you're always an adult.
Yeah.
So that's why he's charged as an adult.
Interesting.
He would undergo a competency evaluation for the new charge because his attorney, James Ritalik, told the judge, it appears like he's not tracking in conversation, like he's in a fog. And Ritalik also says that while about $30,000 had already been spent on mental health evaluations in connection with the murders of his brothers, that he believed that his client's mental state had deteriorated while in the juvenile facility. So at this point, Vidhunhar is transferred to the Weber County Jail with no bail while he awaits evaluations. Because from what I can understand, every time they've done these mental health evaluations in the past, like, he's fine.
Mm.
So in February 2015, health officials would state that Aza Vidhunhar was competent to stand trial. In March, Judge Noel Hyde would rule Vidhunhar's felony assault at the detention center proved that he was no longer fit to be in juvenile detention. He had violated his terms of his plea agreement and would now be entering the Utah State Prison 4 years early. The sentence for the assault was a 0-5 term. And the only issue now was whether it should be served consecutively or concurrently. The prosecution had no issue with it being served concurrent, but they did want him transferred right away to the prison. The judge also made a permanent recommendation for Vidinhar to be allowed access to any mental health treatments offered in the prison. And at this point, the second sentence for the murder charge had yet to be officially handed down in the adult system. So they had to, he hadn't been transferred yet until they officially gave him that sentence. And it was hard, too, because I did find conflicting reports as to whether or not these terms end up being served consecutively or concurrently.
And you know how we all feel about the concurrently crap.
And there was one little video of him in court where his attorney says he's already serving two life sentences. You know, can we just get this served concurrently because he's already going to be in there for a long time? So I don't know if they turned his juvenile murder sentence that he was supposed to be serving there into the adult system.
Don't worry, that's just my weekly phone drop.
Because they didn't really say either way, but there's that one video I watched where he does say that. Okay. So he might be serving two life sentences in the actual prison, but I'm not sure. So in May of 2015, now 17, Vidinhar was officially sentenced to 15 to life in prison for the murder of his 4-year-old brother, Benji. Second District Court Judge David Hamilton ordered that sentence to run concurrently with his 0-5 sentence for assaulting another prisoner in the juvenile facility. But like I said, I did find other ones that said that it was ran consecutively. So I don't.
I'm not sure.
I don't really know.
Okay.
Prior to sentencing, Davis County Deputy District Attorney Brandon Pohl wanted to stress that Vidinhar showed no empathy, remorse, or any type of emotion for his actions. He said he has a callous indifference towards life and towards others. Vidinhar has stated that he did not care how his brothers felt, what his parents are feeling now, or how his actions have affected many others. Right? Pohl said that in regard to the assault on the other inmate, Vidinhar stated that he would have killed him had he had enough time.
Holy shit!
Yeah. He also stated that he had planned to kill his brothers once before because they were being too noisy, but decided against it once they quieted down, and he felt kind of weird about doing it.
Okay.
Yeah. He felt weird about it, so he was like, meh.
Felt kind of weird about that one.
I mean, my kids are noisy. It drives me crazy. And I say I want to kill them, but I don't really mean it. Like,
right.
to legit want to kill people because they're being noisy.
Yeah, I can't. I can't say how many times I'm like, I want to throat punch somebody, or I want to stab somebody in the face, or
yeah.
I don't really mean it.
No. No.
Ugh.
Yeah.
And to stab him that many times.
Yeah, that's some anger there.
And
like some legit anger. 88 times.
And like somebody that you have grown up with and have known since they were babies. Like,
yeah.
It's not just some random person.
No.
Like, that's your family.
And stabbing a 4-year-old, like a little tiny 4-year-old body 28 times, like that's mutilating that body.
Yeah.
Like, terrible. So Utzinger comes back saying that there have been many times when his client has mentioned empathy for his parents. There are some days he seems to care and others that he doesn't. He also said that it's easy to take one line out of a 30-page report and make him look terrible. There are other lines that make him look better than that. Which I just thought was you're making him look horrible, but there's other things you could say that make him look like a tiny bit better.
The way he said it. Just... Who cares? He stabbed his brother 88 times.
Yeah.
Like, what are you going to say to make him look better?
Right. Yeah. So when speaking of Aza's family, Utzinger did say, I know that obviously they're in an impossible situation and trying as best they can to keep their existing family together, knowing that Aza can't be a part of that family. Utzinger says, they've got to piece their lives together as best they can. I think at this point, probably his father and grandfather will try to maintain communication to at least keep tabs on how he's doing. But realistically, I think Aza is pretty much on his own.
That would be the hardest. Like, I can't even put myself in that situation.
No.
Because how would you deal with that? Like, that's your child, too. Like, you raised them.
From what it...
Was he one of the...
He was a biological child.
Mm-hmm. Like, you carried them.
Yeah.
Inside of you. They are part of you.
Yeah.
How do you reconcile, we've talked about this in other cases, but yeah. I just don't know how. I mean, it's hard enough if you find out like a family member that you know has done something like this, but yeah. your child, who's still a child.
Well, and throughout all of this, like, you'll see his dad and his grandfather are in court, but his mom's never mentioned as being at any of these.
Oh,
so
I don't know how yeah. I would do, like,
I don't know, like, what her position is, like, where she stands with it, how yeah. she feels, like, if it's, I just don't know. Yeah.
I cannot even imagine this.
No, it would be so, so hard.
Ugh.
It would be hard enough to have to, like, to stand by your child if they just murdered someone in general.
Yeah.
And not, you know, not only, like, your other children.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Ugh.
Utzinger continues to add that Vidinhar is not a cold-hearted killer. He has a serious mental health issue that has gone undiagnosed and untreated until his arrest. But even at this time, in 2015, doctors had still not fully diagnosed what type of personality disorder he might have. So, that's what, I mean, this has been 2 years, yeah. and he's had thousands of dollars of mental health evaluations.
And they still don't know what's wrong with
him. Which makes me believe that, like, there's not really, that he's just a psychopath.
Yeah, I'm going to have to disagree on this one.
Yeah. He goes on saying how he's just immature and doesn't know how to articulate his feelings. He's in need of all of this help that he probably won't get once in the adult system.
Well, that, like, but he had that chance. He had the chance to get right? the help, and he beat somebody up with a broom.
Yeah, so, he beat someone with a broom.
And
so.
Wanted to kill him if he had more time.
Yeah.
So,
yep.
I don't know what you do with that.
Nope. Apparently, he just goes to prison, and that's that. So, we're going to jump forward 6 years now.
Okay.
On January 12th, 2021, a 35-year-old inmate at the Utah State Prison was arguing with other inmates. When that argument was over, Vidinhar told the inmate to come into his cell, but the man refused. This apparently pissed him off, so he slammed the inmate's head into a wall. He was also caught on camera punching the man in the face while other inmates backed away. He punched him in the back of the head, knocking him to the floor, and continued to punch and kick him. So he's consequently charged with another third-degree felony assault by prisoner. Gosh.
He's how old at this time?
He
like
is 24,
23?
Yeah, like 23.
23, and he just beat the crap out of a 35-year-old?
Uh-huh.
Ooh.
So he would be convicted of that crime and sentenced to a term of 0 to 5, I think, to be served concurrently with his 15 to life sentence, but I'm
What's
not sure.
What's the point of that? Right. Like, if he just keeps getting all these concurrent...
Yeah.
It's like, oh, you just beat the shit out of whoever you want, because, you know,
yeah,
it's fine.
Yep. Then in July of 2021, so 6 months later, he is charged with first-degree attempted murder and first-degree aggravated kidnapping for an incident that took place in March, the same month he was sentenced for the assault in January.
Okay, so, aggravated kidnapping?
Yeah.
In the prison?
Uh-huh.
How do you kidnap someone in prison?
I think it's just when you hold them in their room, in their cell. But don't let them leave. So, and you're just like, no, you can't. You have to stay.
Oh, I'm sorry.
So this okay. time, he enters the cell of a 66-year-old inmate.
Aww.
Telling the man that he's already killed 2 young people with his hands, and now he wants to fulfill his dream of killing someone old with his hands. Okay.
That was on his dream board, was yes. to kill an old yes. person.
Yeah, old and young. So he already did the one.
Ew.
Yeah.
I hate
this.
This
is what makes me like, he is no Jeremy Houck, where like, I really felt like he had a mental health issues. Like,
yeah.
Like he really,
this
I believe,
opposite.
No, he's this kid.
He's a psychopath.
Is a psychopath.
Yeah, I agree.
He's freaky and yeah.
Take so, that to our bank with our, you know, that's our diagnosis.
Yes.
Psychopath.
So he closes the cell door behind him, which is what I think constitutes the kidnapping. And then said.
I'm sorry. It's like kidnapping. I kidnapped a 66-year-old, first of all.
Yeah.
Right? Like, that's not kidnapping.
It's old man, old man
like
napping.
Old man, yeah. Old man napping, where really I just held him in my dirty cell.
Yeah. In his own dirty cell. He went into his cell.
So wouldn't that be like breaking an entry?
I know.
This is so weird.
So he, okay, so he closes the door behind him, and then he said he was going to kill an old man and make it easy on him.
Aww.
He wrapped a cord around the man's neck, saying, stop fighting it and just let me kill you. like the guy's going to be like, okay.
Don't fight it. Don't fight it.
Just let me kill you.
Ew.
Another inmate was walking by at the time, and he heard the man yelling, help me, this guy's going to kill me. So he went and informed a corrections officer right away. When the inmate and the officer returned to the cell, they could still hear the man pleading for his life, but at this point, they were really faint. Because he's choking him to death.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
So once the doors unlocked, the other inmate helped the officer pull Vidinhar off the man. And, okay, so they pull him off. He's charged with first-degree murder, first-degree aggravated kidnapping, or attempted murder. But this was just in 2021, so like a year and a half ago, and yeah. I can't find it. If he's been convicted of it yet.
Oh.
So, as far as I could tell, that, like, maybe charges are still pending. Maybe because he's in there for so long and he's had so many issues, they're just like, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
Eventually.
He's not a priority.
Yeah.
You're not priority one for
this. I'm hoping he's been taken out of Gen Pop and has been put somewhere, like,
I hope so.
By himself, because apparently he does not play well with others.
No.
At all.
And the fact that he said that so, like, cold and callously, yeah. Like, I already killed two young people.
Now I have this dream of killing an old person?
Like, what's wrong with you? Remorse for killing brothers.
Yeah, like, he doesn't care at all.
Oh.
This one was kind of a little bit shorter of an episode, but I wanted to end this with the obituary of the two little boys who lost their lives so callously by someone who was supposed to love and support them. Love and protect them, sorry. And their obituary is kind of strange, too. So it says Alex Vidinhar and Benji Vidinhar, 2002 to 2013 and 2008 to 2013. Says Alex Vidinhar 10 and Benji Vidinhar 4 passed away on Wednesday, May 22nd, 2013. While only in this world a relatively short time, they both touched the lives of many and will be missed greatly. Benji enjoyed most activities, especially if he was with other children. He was on the quiet side in public, but at home he enjoyed singing and dancing, especially to the Mickey Mouse Clubhouse.
Aww.
That's so just like, that's like little baby stuff, you know?
Yeah, because he was four. Mm-hmm.
As many boys his age, he also enjoyed playing with trucks, tractors, and Hot Wheels. Alex was very outgoing and enjoyed meeting new people. He loved singing, especially praise songs, and had an amazing voice. At school, he was happy and friendly with students of all grades, and many students will be sad not to see him in the hallways.
Aww.
In addition to singing, Alex loved riding his bike and running with family members. Alex and Benji are survived by loving siblings, parents, and extended family members. Since this is a funeral for two fun-loving boys, you are encouraged to dress comfortably. Business casual, casual, or children-themed t-shirts, such as dinosaurs, Mickey Mouse, SpongeBob, Adventure Time, Toy Story, etc. However, if you're most comfortable in a suit and tie, please attend dressed up.
Aw, that's terrible.
So terrible. And like I said, I really think these parents are, I don't know if they're trying to, like you said, protect the other kids, or if they're, I don't know, you would almost have like a sense of embarrassment.
Yeah.
That like you birthed someone who was capable of killing his brothers and then goes on and assaults a kid within 5 months of being in detention.
Yeah.
And says he would kill him had someone not stopped him. And then assaults another person and then tries to kill another person.
I don't know what this intervention with the church was. Because that, like, now that you hear the whole story, it's like some shit was going down and maybe they should have got the cops involved, not just the church.
Or they felt, like
something was happening.
I wonder if they noticed some sort of, like, precursor behavior.
Can you imagine like that happening and giving birth to, or like I just always imagine like how the moms of serial killers feel.
Yeah,
like I would feel like my womb was rotten or something. Like what did I do?
Poisonous womb.
What did I do to create this?
Yeah. Well, even
which obviously it's not their fault. It's not the parents' fault. It's not. I mean, sometimes
it's
their fault,
for sure. But I mean, this
it's. Oh, that would
I don't
be
know.
So hard.
And like I said, there's like just so little information about the family. So, like, I don't know if he had a terrible childhood.
Yeah.
I don't know if the parents were terrible parents. They could be great parents. I mean, they adopted 4 children, but yeah, that doesn't mean, you know, there's plenty of people who adopt kids just to be, like, mean to children. Like, you know, so it's, I don't know. It's so just bizarre. And but even Jeffrey Dahmer's father, in one of, like, the last interviews when he's talking, you know, it's like he's, you know, years afterwards still trying to figure out, like, where he went wrong.
What happened?
Like, yeah, what happened? How did this?
Yeah.
How did this happen? Because I think as a parent,
I think that's all you would.
Yeah. You'd be like, what did I do?
Fixated on it. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. What did I do? Am I raising more killers? Yeah. Like, you know, what did I do? What, you know, what didn't I do? Right. And that would just be so hard. But he, to me, is not like Jeremy Houck, where I really do think Jeremy has some mental health issues, and, you know, they were able to diagnose him, and yeah, for them to not have a diagnosis for Aza, it just makes me think
and
that,
for
like,
him to not only to not get better, but just to, like, continue to spiral downward.
Yeah.
And show zero remorse at all. Like, at least with Jeremy, you know, once he got on meds, he, like, felt bad.
Yeah.
And he missed his mom.
Yeah.
This guy's just like, yeah, I did it. And?
Yeah.
Now I'm going to kill an old guy.
Yeah.
Like, what?
Yeah. It's kind of terrifying.
You can kind of see the total opposite ends of that case versus this case.
Yeah.
Which even puts Jeremy Houck in a different light for me.
Uh-huh.
Like, when you hear that that someone like this, who is obvious psychopath.
Yeah. Yeah. He scares me.
Yeah. He scares me too.
Yeah. It was, as I started reading about it more, I was like, oh my gosh, like, he's a real, like, would have been a serial killer. I think he just wasn't very good at hiding it. It was almost like, I don't know. It's almost just like, he didn't really care.
He didn't.
Like, he just wanted to kill, like, they bothered him. So he killed them and just peaced out.
And it was all about the TV that just, like, sent him over the edge.
Yeah, they're being too noisy.
Maybe listening to Mickey Mouse Clubhouse song.
I mean, as parents, we do know, like, sometimes you're like, if I have to listen to this one more time, I'm going to explode.
Yep.
Which is what's great now, like, with tablets, because I don't know how many times I tell Nolan, like, you can watch that on your tablet. I'm not watching that kid's show on the big TV. You can watch on your tablet. So, yeah, I mean, that was
terrible.
Aza Vidinhart. And if hopefully I'll be able to get some more information on what happened with this last assault.
Yeah, we can do a little
so I'll
update.
I'll keep checking on it and then do a little update once we find out.
OK,
what happens? Because it will be interesting to know.
Yeah. Oh,
so,
OK. Well, and thank you for those who have been reaching out to us more on our Messenger and Insta.
You have no idea,
sliding into those DMs.
Sliding in their DMs.
We like it a lot.
You have no idea, like, how excited we get. Like, it's probably stupid.
It is so stupid, but we do. We get so excited. And I show Mario immediately, and then I, like, I'm texting Megan. I'm like, did you see this?
Uh-huh. Yeah, and I...
That's so cool.
Yeah, I'm always, like... Like, this is how many new Patreons we got. Here's like the new messages we got. Because you guys are all so sweet, and everyone is just so nice. And it just is. When you do something like this, you know, we were like, maybe only one person will listen. That's just it. So when we get other people that are actually listening and engaged and like it, it makes us happy.
It does make us happy.
So happy.
So go follow us on all of the things.
Yes,
and,
please.
You know, remember to keep listening if you want in on the sin.
Bye.
Bye.